You're listening to The Arms Room on the Vets on Media Network.
All right, you're on The Arms Room with Glenn.
And John.
Don't mix it up, Mason.
Yeah, dude. Why are you so angry today, like, man?
What are you doing?
Do you need a hug?
I'm mixing it up. Hey, why don't you just do whatever you want to over there, guy? You just do what you want.
And like, we'll just put the camera on my face?
Yeah,
please
like that.
Don't. Please
like
don't. That. Let's not
spend
do
the whole
that.
Show looking at my beautiful face.
So we have to publicly apologize for our show last week where the camera was MIA and the entire show was of Mason's face.
With our voices.
Don't apologize for that.
With our voices.
You're welcome.
You should apologize for all the nose picking and face scratching you did. All right. So what's going on today? What do we got going on?
I don't know.
Man, I had
how was your
military
weekend?
Gear.
Dude.
No.
Go.
What?
Hey, why don't you operate the board
dude,
and be quiet?
Turn his mic off. Choke yourself, Mason. With my
guess
hand.
Who controls the microphone?
Right here. You bring your
this
neck
guy.
To my hand.
This guy.
I had the longest weekend. I am in Zulu Foxtrot mode right now.
Yeah?
If like the world started exploding right now, I would just say
I'd curl up and take a nap.
I would just say, well, that figures.
Yeah. That sounds about
well. This is
that's
happening.
Accurate.
We took a class, John. You were there.
I was there.
So was Shazda. Our good friend Matt Shazda was there, and
yeah.
A couple of our other students were there, and we took a class as students from Granite Firearms Training out at Cowtown. And it was a good class, low light, no light. Got a chance to ring out some gear. It was raining.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's always fun when it rains in training because, you know, we don't ever, independence training, we don't stop for weather.
No, unless it's life-threatening.
Yeah, if it gets life-threatening, then obviously.
Which we haven't
seen non-conducive
yet.
To training if people start falling out because they can't, you know, it's dangerous, basically.
Because it's 115 degrees.
Yeah, been there.
Yeah, we did that.
But... it's kind of funny, you know, when you train with other people and to watch their students just peel out, you know. I mean, it was like some rain started hitting and some students were like not interested in being out there. They were like, hey, I want to learn how to kill people, but not in the rain.
No.
Not in the rain. That's uncomfortable. But we ended up, you know, the instructor was great. John Caniscar, he wanted to train in the rain. He was great.
Yeah, he's all about it.
And we trained. You know, we kept going. It was fun. And it was a good class, but we were there till what, 1:30?
I think morning. I got in my truck and left at 1:45.
Yeah. And then so then I went, you know, we had went and ate Shazda and I, which was an interesting meal. We basically sat in Denny's, watched the bar crowd come in and just kind of very tiredly ate our meal. And but then I had a class to teach with Matt Dobson
at
over
like what, 8?
Class started at 8. We had to start setting up around 7, and I was an hour away from the location. So by the time I got over there, I was going to go stay with a buddy of ours. By the time I got over there, it was like 4 o'clock in the morning.
That's fantastic.
And class started at 8. I had to be up by 7. So I didn't sleep too well in my truck. That's why I just slept in my truck. So, yeah, I was working yesterday on like 2 hours of sleep.
It's good.
But it was still a great class.
Yeah, it's good.
Because professionals do their best work even when they don't want to.
Yeah.
That's how it goes. And Dobson was there to help me out, of course. So it was great. It was a good class, man. It was a really good class. And, yeah, I got home last night around 10:30. No. Yeah. Yeah, it was 10:30. And I was tired.
Just walk in, drop your crap. Hi, wife. Hi, fire team.
Pretty much, you know, had to take a shower.
Oh, well. Yeah.
Unload a bunch of gear because I still have all my training gear. But I'll tell you this. This is what I love about Arizona. This is why I love living in Arizona. We get done with training.
Mm-hmm.
I just throw all my crap in my truck, right? So I've got, like, my suppressed AR just hanging out in my passenger seat all weekend. Loaded all weekend.
Yeah.
Body armor, ammo, all kinds of crap in my truck. Nobody cares.
Nope.
I love living in Arizona. So fantastic. Just cruising around the freeway, loaded AR next to me. No big deal. Not because I think I'm going to need it, but just because I hadn't put it away.
Just because you're too lazy to take it apart and put it away.
And I was tired. You know, so I'm just like, whatever, this can hang out with me here.
No, this can just
and there's
there.
Nothing against the law, so fantastic.
Yeah.
Super
I
fantastic.
Love it.
All right, so today's show,
yeah,
we've got our good friend Jaeger. What's going on, Jaeger?
Just another day. Going to school.
Dude, Real quick, I want to tell everyone about tell us about your blacksmithing thing you got going on.
Right now, I'm in going to MCC and going through the course of blacksmithing, and they're showing us the basics of how to do little things here and there. But so far, I've made some knives and some tomahawks. It's pretty fun.
I'm looking in my hands. I see.
Yeah, I don't have either of these.
There's a curious lack of tomahawk.
There's a lack of tomahawks here.
I got one in the truck. I'll bring it in. So
I've been every time you post pictures, man, on your Facebook page, I just Google those tomahawks. They look awesome. But now you and Bobby have started a thing.
Yeah, he's got his welding and. That he's done in the past, so he's more experienced than myself. I'm beginning, you know, just starting to go to school, learning new stuff. So he's very experienced in what he's doing, and he's got some pretty good ideas out there. And
but he just started a Facebook page for kind of a company idea, right? What's it called?
For his, it's Reaper
Customs or something like that. Yeah. So that's
sounds
pretty cool.
Deadly.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
Nice.
So, yeah, I'm excited, man. I know Jaeger delivered last week within, like, a minute or two. He posted a picture of this knife.
Yeah, and stabbing meats.
And I said, yeah, next time you post a picture of a knife, it better be stabbing into some meat. And, like, a minute later, he had a picture of his knife stabbed into some pepperoni on a pizza. How fantastic is that? Freaking Johnny on the spot, man. So... today's topic, we're going to be talking to Jaeger, and we've had Jaeger on the show before talking to us about the evolution of gear, military equipment. Mm-hmm. You know, Jaeger's got a lot of experience over many years of different types of gear. You know, when you, I'm trying to remember that show exactly, but basically you started with, like, Alice.
Yeah.
And you ended with Molly.
Yep.
Which sounds kind of hot, by the way.
Yeah.
But but and in between there's all kinds of equipment and everything, and we talked about that evolution, what you'd seen and what got better and what didn't. That was, I think, back in November, I think that show was. I just remember because my old man was here, so I think I think it was 2014. But anyways, today we're gonna be talking about surviving life and death situations, which you've done a little of.
Just a little bit.
Cool. So kind of lead us through maybe some of the things that you've dealt with. Let's start there.
All right. I think the biggest situation is in the situation where you can't do anything. You know, direct fire, indirect fire, sniper, whatever is out there. It's feeling helpless, and you can't do anything, and those are the biggest problems that I've dealt with over the years. So it's just you never know what's going to happen, and most of the time, or quite a bit of time, you find yourself not able to do anything. So it's kind of hard, you know, you're in charge of quite a few people, you don't know where people are shooting at you from, what's the best thing to do, you know, and most no, all the time it's take cover or keep driving is the best ways to do it. So there's other situations. My first Afghanistan deployment, we did a lot of, you know, go out and find the enemy. We'd start it. We wouldn't wait to get ambushed or drive around to get shot at. We would actually go out and do what we had spent years training to do. And it most of the time ended up in a one-way firefight where we just wipe them out or we scare them away, whatever comes about. And then my last time in Afghanistan, it was more of the drive around, wait to get shot at, reacting, not being proactive as much as I would hoped, you know. So there's, you know, quite a bit of times where we had one firefight that sticks out in my mind is we're driving up this valley and everybody was, well, the enemy had clearly been waiting for us to come up there and we had no idea that they were there and ended up being like an hour long shootout driving up a mountain. And, you know, nothing's going to prepare you for taking casualties along the way, but that's what happened, and you just got to fight your way through. And it doesn't matter if it's downpouring rain, which it, in our instance it was, muddy roads. You have no idea where these guys are running at because you know they're up above you, and it's kind of hard to see that in a Humvee, you know. It's you just got to be have that mindset to turn it on as quickly as possible and figure out what you're doing to push through. So that's it was a rough day, I'll just put it that way.
Now, what do you think, you know, you kind of mentioned as you got, as you were starting, that, you know, sometimes there's nothing you can do about it.
Yeah. Right?
So I think that with any, because we're kind of talking about life and death situations, and based on your experience, which is mostly combative type stuff, but kind of life and death situations in general, I mean, what do you think the average person can do? Whether they're looking for, you know, I may have to survive a self-defense situation, to I may have to survive a vehicle accident, to, you know, our listeners, of course, who are still active duty or law enforcement officers who may find themselves in combative situations. What, let's start with like a physical thing. What can people do physically to start to prepare for situations where they might either be in control or sometimes not in control?
Sure. I would say the best thing you can do for yourself is, how far can you take yourself? How much physical training do you do for yourself? How far can you go hiking up Superstition Mountain, for example? It's a 4-hour hike, and I think I did it around like 2.5 to 3 hours. I don't know, I kind of lost track, but you just gotta see how far you can take yourself with your training, whether it's physical or with your firearms.
So physical fitness is important.
Absolutely.
I mean, when you find yourself in those kind of situations, the life and death stuff you were talking about before, I mean, did you personally, or did you see people around you getting like physically exhausted to the point where it started to deplete their capacity to respond?
Yes. It most of the time ended up with slight heat stroke, or, you know, some kind of heat injury or something like that. One, they probably weren't drinking enough water, or, I mean, if you're not going to do any kind of hiking, probably going to wear yourself out pretty quick. I don't know. It's, each individual is different. You need to know what you can take personally. If you're not out there testing yourself, you're clearly going to fail a lot quicker than you think.
So physical fitness needs to be not just a maintenance thing, but a
couple times a week in the gym or out hiking every week.
Cool. So it's like an improvement thing, not just maintenance. We can't just maintain the status quo of like
always improve.
Always improving. Okay. Yep. So that's kind of step one, is physically get into better shape. And that's something we talk about a lot in our training, whether it's, you know, yesterday we were teaching medical class. Mm-hmm. So, you know, from a medical perspective, it's like if you go into a bad situation already broken down because, you know, you're not getting good diet, you're not exercising, you're not hydrated, etc. If you're already broken down because of those things, then your ability to respond effectively is going to be diminished, and I think also your ability to like take damage.
This is true. Is going to be diminished. I think I'm trying to remember exactly the way they used to say it, but the more you work out, the more blood you have to give away, basically.
Yeah, the more you sweat in training, the less you bleed in battle, right?
Yep. So, but now if you like. Some people do get hit. I can't remember the exact situation, but one guy, I think this was in 05, he was on like the far extreme flank of their movement or whatever in their shootout, and he got hit 4 times, pushed the whole way through till it was over, and then, you know, got medevaced out. But that's a perfect example for that. You can push yourself through. If you have more blood in your system from being physically fit, you can lose a lot more and survive longer. Hopefully that never happens.
Well, you know, a lot of people will see, like, special operations guys, for example, and they'll see how, you know, they read a book or see a movie and how many times these guys get hit and they're still fighting.
Yep.
And, yeah, that has a lot to do with their mindset, but let's not discount the physical capability. They're well-trained, they're in shape, best shape of their lives, and, you know, that high level of physical fitness has to do with their ability to survive terrible things.
Absolutely.
You know, so it's like sometimes you see people who aren't as physically fit, and they want to come to us and they want to learn, you know, combatives or shooting or whatever. And it's like, hey, you know, step one might be not worrying so much about learning how to shoot people or fight people or whatever, but it might be a much better option to get physically fit.
Yeah.
So that you can, like, get to the enemy, I think, number one, and then take damage from the enemy.
Yeah, I think part of that is people hear all these stories about how these moms will flip minivans off of their kids and all this other stuff, and they're always assuming that their body's going to rise to that occasion.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Which, there is some validity to that, but the higher, the better conditioned you are to begin with, the further you'll be able to push in that instance with that.
Yep.
With that adrenaline dump and so on and so forth. So I think a lot of people get too wrapped up on, oh, well, I'll be all right. I'm okay, you know.
Yep. Stories are inspirational, but if you gotta make that cut, man. If you can only go 1 minute of adrenaline, yep, compared to, you know, 3 days or something, there's a huge difference.
It's, oh, yeah.
You gotta work out, man. I mean, I have occasional injuries here and there, and I kind of took last year off and didn't work out a whole lot. Spent most of my time hiking, yeah, rather than lifting weights, and I'm starting to get back into the gym for the past couple months now and get my strength back, and we'll see how it works out.
Well, I think it also bears mentioning that you just went through Tough Mudder with us too.
That's right. That was fun. Thanks for pulling me up the Everest 2.0.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a good time, man. That, yep, was a good time. But, you know, it's I think it's things like that that so often guys, and especially like veterans or even sometimes law enforcement guys, will really get into, you know, like, hey, I used to be in such great shape.
Oh, yeah.
And so they kind of continue to think like, oh, hey, you know, I'm out of service or whatever, so I can kind of let myself slide. We all do it, right?
Yeah.
And then it's like that slide, that descent is so fast.
Oh, you know, dude, it's terrible. Like, I've ridden that slide so many times, and it took me a long time to realize, hey, I'm not in my early 20s anymore.
Right.
I can't go on an all night bender and then get up and go run 6 miles now.
No.
Because if I do that, I'm gonna die at like mile two.
Right.
So it you know, you have to really stop and take inventory of, okay, well, this is what I used to do. Let's see if we can get back to that, because this is what I can do now.
It's unfortunate. You'll never get back.
No.
God, it's never going to happen.
Never,
I mean,
gonna,
it's
get that.
Because you're never going to be in a situation where someone is driving you that hard.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, that's the issue. Like, it's tough even in my own physical fitness to like push myself as hard as I used,
right,
to be pushed.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah, for sure.
So we'll kind of start this, and we'll have to kind of take a break in the middle of it, but we kind of talked about physical. Okay, you got to prep yourself physically. How, yeah, about mentally? I mean, like, that's a really tough thing, because people talk about mindset all the time. Like, mindset this and mindset that, and you hear it a lot in training, mindset. But I think that sometimes people get almost too focused on mindset, and they forget about, like, hey, like, we just talked about physical, right? I mean,
mm-hmm,
skills, in my experience, in my opinion, skills are still going to trump mindset. Because you can have all the, mm-hmm, mindset in the world and be out of shape and incapable of doing things, and all I have to do is have a greater skill set than you. My mindset could be weaker. I mean, that's my opinion.
Yeah.
But the idea is, how does someone mentally prepare for a life and death situation? Because that's a big thing, and I think like a lot of CCW holders, a lot of, you know, civilians who are carrying firearms, and also a lot of law enforcement military guys who've never been in a critical stress situation, you don't really know how you're going to react until you get into that kind of situation.
Yeah.
So based on your experience, I mean, what did you see guys do or yourself do to mentally prepare for those kind of situations? And then did it work?
All right. Well, I'd say after my first Iraq deployment, it sucked. I didn't get to do any kind of combat. We got like shot at one time, and that was like early on. It was a drive-by. What are you gonna do? You're gonna hit the dirt really quick, because you gotta figure out where it's happening, because it's in the middle of the night. What am I gonna do? And it just seems like when you actually get to that point, you don't know how you're going to react. I mean, I don't know how the next person is going to react. I've seen very physically capable people just totally collapse when it came to that point. And it's it's you can try, you can think yourself through a million scenarios, but you'll never be prepared for it because you don't know when it's going to happen. You don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. After gaining experience with numerous things that happen or whatever, your mindset finally gets steady enough to the point where you'd be like, well, I've been through these type of horrific situations. I'm fairly certain at like my point right now, I'm pretty sure I can handle just about almost anything, I would think, you know, but I don't know. I mean, I've never come across a, you know, collapsed building with children inside it, you know, so I don't know how I'd react in right. that situation. I'm sure I would do my best to help. Or, you know, there's another instance that we had with Taliban, whoever they were. They V-bitted right outside our little base or whatever, ended up killing like 20 plus kids. And the way the parents could keep track of which kids were theirs was picking up little shoes off the ground. It's not ideal to be in that kind of situation. Yeah. I mean, that really sucks, but what are you going to do about it? It already happened. So you just kind of, you know, play your part for whatever situation comes up. But there's no way to prepare you for that. It really sucks.
It's not always going to be a firefight that gets to you. I've seen people in similar situations like that just freeze and not do anything. Mm-hmm. I mean, you expect adults to die, but when you see children die, it's a different experience. Yeah.
Well, I think that's you know, that's part of the whole mental thing that we're looking at here is like, how do you prepare yourself? You know, so often, again, as like an armed citizen or a cop or whatever, a military guy, you know, we're always taught and training.
Right.
We're going to be handling this threat. It's going to be this right. when you're, bad guy, but we don't think about the fact that...
If you do enough training, for us, it's, you know, years of training. I mean, most of the time, everybody knows what to do, but, I mean, we're doing things on a team basis, so you always have your sergeant that's way more experienced than you come running up to you and go down the line and make sure you're doing the right thing. And that's all you're doing, you know, is making sure everybody else is doing the right thing. And I would say with enough training, you could possibly get to the point where you can properably react to a situation. But I don't know, once the bullets start flying and people start dropping, it's a whole totally different ball game. So
we're going to take our first break. When we come back, we're going to keep talking about how to prepare ourselves to kind of survive life and death situations. We're going to get a little bit kind of change course a little bit and talk about some different things. When we come back, we're going to still have Jaeger on the show with us. You're listening to The Arms Room.
Going to need an attorney at some point in your life. I'm no different. Hey everyone, it's James from Vets On. Whether it was my last will and testament before deployment or my ongoing custody battle for my children during my divorce, I needed help, so I lawyered up. If you need help, I urge you to contact Capstrom Law Firm. Capstrom Law Firm in Springfield, Missouri services clients throughout the state in criminal law, personal injury, and family law. With over 13 years practicing law, Tom Capstrom understands both law and court procedures and how stressful they can be. Let Tom Capstrom Law Firm and his dedicated staff take the stress and worry out of a difficult situation by calling him today. We feel so strong about the work that Tom and his staff are doing that he'll be a monthly guest on the show. Tom is a veteran and a listener, for God's sake, so you know the guy is solid and will fight for you. Give Tom a call today by calling 417-864-0552 or email Tom at capstromlaw.com. And don't forget to tell him that Vets On sent you.
The choice of a lawyer is an important decision and should not be based solely upon advertising.
If you or someone you know is looking for a new job or career, you need to visit the pros. National Career Fairs at ncfairs.com. National Career Fairs hosts over 300 career fairs a year nationwide. The events are free and give you the perfect chance to meet some of the top employers in your area face to face. To find the nearest career fair to you, visit ncfairs.com. Again, that's ncfairs.com. What are you waiting for?
Better veterans served us, now it's time we serve them. As a veteran of Afghanistan and Iraq, as well as a current military member deployed abroad, I would like to take a minute of your time to tell you about Patriot Hills of New York. Patriot Hills of New York is a nonprofit organization providing support to veterans and their families. They partner veterans in need with over 65 health and wellness organizations, community groups, as well as philanthropic foundations providing no or low-cost services. They've helped over 400 veterans through confidential referral services, assistance with veterans issues, employment placement, as well as educational opportunities. If you need assistance or just want to help veterans by donating your time or services, contact them at info@patriothills.org. Again, that's info@patriothills.org. Visit patriothillsofnewyork.com for more information about their services or how you can donate. Our veterans deserve no less. We can give it to them, and you can help.
You're listening to The Arms Room on the VetsOn Media Network.
All right, you're back on The Arms Room. Today we're talking with Jaeger in our studio about surviving life and death situations and kind of what it takes. And we've talked about being physically prepared, and now we're kind of talking about being mentally prepared. And I think one of the things you guys said during the break that is really important to repeat is acceptance.
Yeah, you have to accept every day when you get out of bed. We all drive cars. People die in car accidents every day, right? Those of us that carry guns, you know, I accept that when I get out of bed and I put my gun on in the morning, that if I pull my gun out, there's a chance I'm going to be shot or I'm going to have to shoot someone else or both. But you have to really sit down and evaluate and put yourself through these things. And it's something that we used to talk about, and we still do quite a bit in our training classes, is visualization. You know, you have to sit down and go, okay, what could happen? How am I going to react when this happens? Now, it's not the same as being in a firefight. I know the first time I got shot at in Afghanistan, I almost pooped myself because I was like, oh, crap, I'm going to die, you know, because it was small arms. And then here comes this screaming RPG, and I'm like, oh, God, it's over. But before I'd done that, you know, the job I have, I accepted that something like that could happen. You know, yes. I was like, okay, this is, it's going to suck if it happens, but it's not, you know, it's not out of the realm of normal or possible for something like that to happen. So you really have to sit down and think about the things that could happen, accept that they're going to happen, and then find a way to prepare yourself to handle those situations when they do happen.
It's all a game.
I think that the acceptance thing is really important because, you know, it's like you said, we drive all the time. We talked about kids earlier. I mean, we have to start thinking about the realistic things that are going to happen to us. Like you mentioned, you know, that's part of what we do in our training classes. But, you know, you have to start getting realistic about the things that are going to happen. Look, the reality of one of my kids being killed in a vehicle accident is much higher than me smoke checking some dude in my living room.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean?
Like,
and so I have to start being, and obviously, you know, deployments and things like that are a little bit different. We're looking at different realities of what might happen.
Right.
But the idea is, we have to start preparing ourselves mentally for the realistic things. You know, so many people, like as we were kind of talking about the kids thing earlier, you know, so many people are so ready because through their training to handle a bad guy or deal with some combative situation. Or, you know, yesterday we were talking in our medical class of like, everyone's ready in after these kind of classes to handle some catastrophic hemorrhage. But, you know, are you prepared to handle, you know, one of your kids choking?
Yeah.
Do you know how to stop a kid from choking?
Or are you prepared to handle a catastrophic hemorrhage on a 5-year-old kid?
Or are you me, capable of handling
like
that?
It's a whole other world, man.
So, you know, acceptance is a big part of that. I like that. So tell us more, Jaeger, about why do you think, based on all the situations that you were in, why did you survive?
Well, luck has a lot to do with it, I'm sure. But I'd have to say it mostly boils down to having good teammates. I mean, if you don't have anybody watching your back, you know, it's kind of hard to survive that kind of stuff by yourself. Now, granted, in, you know, this walking around to Windco or, you know, down to the mall or something like that, you know, it's not the same scenario. But I don't know. It's just, I'd have to put it on my buddies. I really do. Because if I'm in a jam or something, or, you know, having a shootout at 10,000 feet up in the mountains somewhere in Afghanistan, it's you're really depending on your buddies to react the right way. And then, you know, them shooting the enemy, and then you can move to shoot the enemy as well. I'm just trying to think, man, and it's really what it boils down to is my good friends. So,
well, I think that's a really good point. It's something, again, it's something we've talked about when we're training people, is surrounding yourself with the right people.
Yep.
You know, it's one of the things we talk about, like in our CCW class, for example, where we talk about the things that are going to change as you start to carry a gun. And one of the things we always tell people is, like, your friends and the people you surround yourself with. Yeah. Because as you start to get into a different type of lifestyle, whether it's overseas in a military unit or here at home, you know, with your family and friends or whatever, who you surround yourself with and their capabilities is important. You know, if you go backpacking with a bunch of people who are more likely to get you hurt than get you help, then
that's bad.
That's probably not going to be a very fun backpacking trip, right? And you know, it's like, you think about, like, growing up and the different friends that you hung out with. Like, there was always the friend that would constantly get you into trouble.
Then
there was always the friend that would constantly get you out of trouble.
Yep.
You know, and even when you got yourself into trouble, there was that friend who would still get you out of trouble. And I think that is, you know, an important lesson to take away from what you're talking about is, who do we surround ourselves with? You know, who are our friends? What are we doing with our families? You know, our spouses, our kids, whatever, you know, what are we doing with them? Are we teaching them to be assets or liabilities? You know, and sometimes we spend so much time training ourselves that we kind of forget
about that one group of people that we spend a lot of time with.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, is it going to be more important for me to train with John, who's, you know, with me a lot, we train a lot together and everything, or is it going to be more important to make sure that my wife is well trained?
Yep.
You know, so who we surround ourselves with is really important. And luck does have a lot to do with it. Now words. I have an opinion on luck, and it's, you know, this is not like a me quote. I read this years and years ago, and I'm sure you've heard it before, but that luck is preparation meeting opportunity.
Yeah.
Right? So people talk about, oh, well, you know, how'd you get this job or whatever? Oh, people say I was just lucky. Or, oh, how'd you find that good-looking wife? Oh, I was just lucky. There are different levels of luck, but, yeah, I mean, for the most part, it's kind of preparation meeting opportunity.
Yeah.
Until I think there's a time point where you just, I mean, it just freaking shit happens, man.
Yeah.
You know? And I think that, kind of going back to that acceptance thing, that's, you can be as prepared as you want and always be doing the right thing and still just.
Yep. What God says. When the time is the time, it's, I mean, there's nothing, it, regardless of,
you'll never know,
regardless
what's
of
happen,
your skill set, so, regardless of your training, regardless of your mindset, regardless of anything, stuff just goes south sometimes, man, and there's nothing you can do to stop it.
So on that note of preparation, I mean, you mentioned luck and the guys you were with, which I totally agree with, you know, can keep somebody alive. But how about, you know, the training you've been through? Like, at that point, you know, from your first bad situation to your last bad situation, obviously there was all kinds of training that happened in there. As your training got better and you did more of it, do you feel like that really aided you in survival capability?
Your training is a confidence builder. And the more training you get, the more confident you are to the situation when it arises. And you know, training for years doing reflexive fire drills clear a building pretty well, I think, you know, or doing just walking out in the woods and listening to what's going on, you know. I mean, if you train yourself to the point where you know what's going on around you without paying a whole lot of, it doesn't look like you're paying a whole lot of attention, but you are, you know, not necessarily watching over your shoulder all the time, but enough training into a particular thing can gets you confidence, and confidence is where it's at. And at that moment where you need that confidence, most of the time it'll pay off, I think. So,
and that training also, back to the people rise to the occasion, people don't rise to the occasion, people sink to their highest level of training. That stuff becomes an automatic response.
Yep.
You know, stuff goes south. Okay, boom.
Muscle memory kicks in, right?
Your consciousness basically shuts down, and you go on autopilot for what you were trained to do and how you were trained to do it, and you just do it.
Yep.
And you just go. So.
Now, how much, for the average person who's listening, how much training do you think they really need?
All the time?
Yeah. As much as you can get.
All the time.
Is that possible?
As much as
it is. I mean, you have to develop a, you know, skill set. I sit in my chair or whatever and have my pistol out and, you know, just practice running, you know, drills on my pistol. If I never do that, I'm never going to get really, really good at it. I'm not the greatest person with a pistol because in the Army we never use them. But, you know, since I've gotten out and I did some contracting, we used pistol quite a bit. So whatever pistol I have, I try and do. If I can't feel my pistol and know what I'm touching with my eyes closed, then, you know, I'm not really good at it yet. So, you know, just keep training on your individual piece of the puzzle. And, you know, whether it's your AR or your AK pistol, whatever it may be, you just gotta constantly be playing with those weapons so you understand your weapon. If you don't know your weapon, it's, you know, could be a bad day.
Now, you mentioned something that I think is kind of, I want to touch on for a second, and that is, you said in the Army, you know, never really used pistols.
Mm-hmm.
We moved over to a different profession, then it was different, used pistols right. more. But I think that for so many people who haven't been in the military or maybe were in different types of jobs in the military, they think, well, all military training is just all about weapons, right? Because if you're going to take the fight to the enemy, then you've got to learn shoot all the time, right?
It's so much more than that, though.
So what other kind of training should people be seeking out? Because so often when we have people who come to us for training, be they military, law enforcement, or civilian, it's just shoot. And a lot of times, like, students have told us, I came here expecting a shooting class and I got a lifestyle class.
Yeah.
You know, because of the different things we talk about. But I mean, from your perspective, what other types of training do people need to be worried about?
Well, you have your medical training, which I think is utmost probably equal to firearms training. It's just as important. You know, need to know how to save a life, also take a life, but saving life is way more important than taking, in my opinion. And if you don't know what to do, if somebody's got a chest wound and they can't breathe, how are you going to fix that? I mean, you can watch YouTube videos all day long, but you need to get this equipment and train with it. Get one of your buddies with you and practice. You know, go to a medical class. I know there's many around here that you can do. I'd say another thing to do on that is, it's kind of like a personal thing, is, but if with your equipment, you're never going to know if your equipment works unless you use it. I know we touched on that last show, but you have to constantly be changing and moving your gear to find out what works for you as an individual. Mm-hmm. If you know, 16 magazines are in the very front of your chest, I don't think that's going to work, you know, but you need to figure out, can I move in this? How can I move in this? Can I lay down in this? You got to cover all your scenarios, but that's kind of like a personal training. Where am I going to reach here every time to pull out a magazine, or am I going to reach over here? And you got to play with all your stuff. You got to take it out of the closet.
And we talked about physical training as well.
Mm-hmm.
Got to get physical training. But I mean, think about some of the other types of training that we did in the military too. I mean, I know
it's knowledge,
one,
man.
One thing that was big for me was just constantly studying what people had done before me. And that's that's still what I do. Constantly
stories are great.
Studying what people had done before me. How did this person live? Why did they live? Why did their gear work, or why did it fail? Because if their gear failed and I just picked up the same piece of gear, I just got issued the same piece
probably
of gear.
Probably should figure
whatever,
out why it failed.
Probably figure out why it failed and fix it or change it or whatever. And so I think that that's a big part of it too is you know, constantly studying what other people have done. That training is important too, that research, you know, reading books. One of my favorite things to do, and not being a door kicker or anything, it's important to me because I have like almost no experience doing that kind of stuff. I like reading stories about, you know, infantry units in Afghanistan and what they did and how they did it and how they survived and what they did as a unit, what they did individually. I really enjoy those kinds of books. You know, like, you guys ever read that, crap, what's it called? Outlaw Platoon, I think is the name of the book. It's a really great book about basically how this unit used total terror to stay alive. Their sole focus, they figured it out early on, that their sole focus was just completely terrorize the enemy to the point where they didn't even want to engage him anymore. The enemy didn't want to engage this platoon anymore because of every time they would engage them, they would just freaking rain hell down on these guys. They would use every asset possible, and it got to the point where the second half of their deployment was relatively easy because no one engaged them anymore.
Yep.
You know, and it's like that was an interesting lesson, and I took that and said, okay, now how can I apply this to the civilian world? You know, how can I apply this to getting my enemy to not engage me? You know what I mean? How do I put forth that image to the point where my enemy says, you know, I don't even want to engage this guy? And I think that, you know, that's, to me, that's an important part of training is constantly studying and learning, and not just learning about how you can do it, but learning about your enemy too.
Yeah. Anytime we went to Afghanistan, we have a lot of studying to do. We need to study the history of how these people got to where they're at right now. And, you know, why guys running around with flip-flops, AKs are so effective at what they do. Mm-hmm. And, you know, having my last deployment, I had a previous Afghanistan deployment, so I had a lot to share with the guys who had never been there before. I'm like, well, this is the way we did it back then, but we're going to be under NATO this time, so it's probably going to be slightly different, but this is what you're going to expect. Expect every time you go up into those mountains and you're going to take a couple-hour break or something like that, just dig in. Mm. Don't even ask. Just dig in, because you're going to appreciate it a lot better. And a lot of people thought I was crazy for saying something like that, but after a couple times up there, they're like, you're absolutely right. I don't know why I doubted you. I'm like, well, you got to dig in. That's infantry 101. After you get everything set up, you dig in, especially if it's for an overnighter. So, I mean, it is what it is, man.
Well, I think that's a, you know, just kind of good point is, again, learning from past experiences and those guys learning from you, like, hey guys, I've been here before. I know how this game's gonna play out.
Right.
You know, here's the things that we did last time that tended to work. I think about that. What was that old movie? That old Vietnam movie, Hamburger Hill, where the one guy's yelling. He's yelling at that boot, and he's like, and he's like, you're gonna learn from the people who've been here before. You know, and that's something that I remembered watching that as like a teenager. I remembered that part pretty much my whole life of like, I need to learn from the people who've been there before.
That's a valid point. Learn from other people who have done similar things that you're interested in or want to prepare yourself for. Talk to a vet. A lot of infantry guys, they have the same stories because they went through a lot of the same stuff, different areas and different situations, but more or less the same thing. And it's, you got to talk to people. Anytime I come across a World War II vet or something like that, I try and talk to them, find out what their world was like at that time, you know, and everyone's different. You know, not everyone saw combat during World War II, same as now, you know. So I spend time talking to some of the older vets from, like, Vietnam and, you know, people who were in the Gulf War and stuff, and there's so much to learn out there from people's firsthand experience, and it's a waste not to talk to people about this.
We got to take our second and final break. When we come back, I want to hear about how you think gear and equipment played a part, if at all, in surviving, you know, really bad situations. What did gear or equipment do for you that saved you or, you know, almost screwed you. So we're gonna talk about that when we come back from the break. You're listening to The Arms Room.
Veterans served us, now it's time we serve them. As a veteran of Afghanistan and Iraq, as well as a current military member deployed abroad, I would like to take a minute of your time to tell you about Patriot Hills of New York. Patriot Hills of New York is a nonprofit organization providing support to veterans and their families. They partner veterans in need with over 65 health and wellness organizations, community groups, as well as philanthropic foundations providing no or low-cost services. They've helped over 400 veterans through confidential referral services, assistance with veterans issues, employment placement, as well as educational opportunities. If you need assistance or just want to help veterans by donating your time or services, contact them at info@patriothills.org. Again, that's info@patriothills.org. Visit patriothillsofnewyork.com for more information about their services or how you can donate. Our veterans deserve no less. We can give it to them, and you can help. Everyone's going to need an attorney at some point in their life. I'm no different. Hey everyone, it's James from Vets On. Whether it was my last will and testament before deployment or my ongoing custody battle for my children during my divorce, I needed help, so I lawyered up. If you need help, I urge you to contact Capstrom Law Firm. Capstrom Law Firm in Springfield, Missouri services clients throughout the state in criminal law, personal injury, and family law. With over 13 years practicing law, Tom Capstrom understands both law and court procedures and how stressful they can be. Let Tom Capstrom Law Firm and his dedicated staff take the stress and worry out of a difficult situation by calling him today. We feel so strongly about the work that Tom and his staff are doing that he'll be a monthly guest on the show. Tom is a veteran and a listener, for God's sake, so you know the guy is solid and will fight for you. Give Tom a call today by calling 417-864-0552. Or email Tom at capstromlaw.com. And don't forget to tell him that Vets On sent you.
The choice of a lawyer is an important decision and should not be based solely upon advertising.
If you or someone you know is looking for a new job or career, you need to visit the pros. National Career Fairs at ncfairs.com. National Career Fairs hosts over 300 career fairs a year nationwide. The events are free and give you the perfect chance to meet some of the top employers in your area face-to-face. To find the nearest career fair to you, visit ncfairs.com. Again, that's ncfairs.com. What are you waiting for?
You're listening to The Arms Room on the Vets On Media Network.
All right, you're back on The Arms Room, and I'm going to put this up for the video to see, because that thing is freaking awesome. That is a railroad spike tomahawk. It's like the second one you made, right?
I made three.
Three?
Yep.
So
let's test it.
Yes, test. Hey, Mason, bring your face over here.
Mason, bring it across. Let's see if we can shave your face with this.
He doesn't shave. Don't be silly.
Oh, sorry. You'll be a grown-up someday.
So awesome tomahawk from John. Thanks for bringing that in, man.
Yeah.
So let's talk about, we've been talking with Jaeger about surviving bad life and death situations. What effect do you think gear and equipment had, if any, on your survival?
It has a certain percentage of time, like, oh my God, I'm glad that worked out for me and I will continue to do that. Or I built this chest rig, which I thought was a really cool idea. It fast clipped onto the OTV, and I was like, this is pretty cool. And then, you know, hours into doing stuff, and it just fell apart on me. It's like, really good idea, but it's just never going to happen again. And I was disappointed because I liked it a lot, but... It, you know, you got to learn along the way. I'd say that was probably my biggest upsetting thing of things I've tried to invent or create or assist me along the way is my chest rig not working out. let's see, there was I like to have my magazine pouches secured over the top. Not with a bungee cord, but with a fast clip or, you know, something that snaps more or less. To me, that way I know I'm not going to lose it, because there's been some times where I've been running around doing stuff and go back to base and like, I know I left with 7 magazines. Now I have 5. What went wrong? And it was, you know, probably my gear wasn't secured properly or something like that. But, you know, it's gear is important, but you just got to find out what works for you and experiment along the way with, you know, making your gear your own rather than using a out-of-the-box kind of mentality of...
Well, do you think people spend too much time on gear? And what I mean by that is...
Yes.
You know, like, people ask us all the time, like, oh, what handgun should I get? What carbine should I get? And it's like, I don't know.
you know what I mean? The simple answer to your question is yes. People get too wrapped up in widgets.
Yeah.
Because widgets are cool.
Yeah.
I sell widgets. I like to buy widgets. But unless you already know how to use those things,
yeah,
your gear really doesn't start to play, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. I think equipment, gear should be like one of the last couple things.
Yeah,
that
yeah. You're, yeah. Because it, once you reach a certain skill level,
yeah,
then you need to look at upgrading your equipment because yeah. you have now reached a level where you are outrunning your equipment. Whatever your equipment is, whether right. it's your car, whether it's you know your hiking boots, your rucksack, whatever it is, mm-hmm. you know you get to a certain point where you're able to outperform what your gear can. Then it's time to start reevaluating your gear and upgrading your gear.
Well, there's so much talk out there, you know, kind of like we talked about in previous shows. There's so much talk out there about caliber and AR versus AK, 9 versus 45, Glock versus 1911, whatever. All these
all these
if things. If it works about, for you, yeah, roll with it.
What's in this pattern, or I need the newest pattern of this, or I need the newest chest rig, or I need the newest plate carrier, or I need a different holster, I need all this. Like, people spend hundreds and thousands of dollars on gear.
I think you meant to say hundreds of thousands.
Maybe hundreds of thousands of dollars on gear, and they don't, but they don't know how to use it effectively. Or, like we saw at this class on Saturday, you know, there were some guys with some pretty slick pieces of equipment, and then it starts raining, and they're just like, I'm going to melt, run for the hills, you know, and I'm going, you serious?
I don't want to get my gear dirty.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, how do you plan on that stuff?
No, for what that guy paid for that gear, I don't know that I'd want to get it dirty either.
Man, I mean, there's some of those, like, people lean too heavily on their gear.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, you need to lean on your skill, man. It's kind of that one mind, any weapon concept of, you know, I can't.
How Marine Corps of you.
I can't be, you know, relying on this one piece of equipment
because
exactly. it might fail or it might not work or my fancy doodad widget thing might not be available.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think people lean too heavily on gear. Did you see any of that in your situations where people rely too much on equipment?
At one point, when we got over to Afghanistan, I think they put out, like, as long as it's ACU, we don't care what it looks like. I'm like, okay, that's fine. And then I think there was at one point where I was like, if you guys in your gear... That's it. Everybody's going back to the SOP.
Mm-hmm.
We went back to the SOP for a while until they understood what they needed to change instead of just
changing.
Not understanding what they had. And after, I think it was like maybe a month of that or whatever, I was like, okay, everybody go back to what works for you. And then everything started working a lot better after that.
Mm-hmm.
And they, you know, it takes time to understand your equipment. If, you know, I have stuff now that, you know, I bought years ago and it doesn't work anymore and it sits in a box and I just gave up using it because it doesn't fit anymore or it doesn't work for what I'm trying to do. And there are some things that I've had these 3 magazine pouches. I've had like 4 or 5 of them over the years. I've lost some or whatever, but I still use them for, you know, running some magazines on a particular chest rig for a particular situation. Mm-hmm. Not everyday use. I mean, it's, gear is important, but it's get good at what you're trying to do first. The gear will come later.
Because then you get people on the totally opposite side of the spectrum. They're like, oh, well, the Army issued me this, so it's like the best thing right. that I'm ever going to have. And you're like, no, it's not.
Right.
Lowest bidder.
Mm-hmm.
So to kind of round out, we got a few more minutes left. To round out the show, we've talked about physically and mentally prepping for life and death situations. We've talked about, you know, some of the examples of why you think, you know, you survived, which is mostly luck and the people around you.
Sure.
Which has to do a lot, you know, I think, which is preparation that has a lot to do with it.
Yep.
the kind of effect that training and equipment had on survival. But how would you, if you were going to say something to the average person who is trying to prepare for life and death situation, be they a civilian, be they a military person, law enforcement officer, whatever, what would you say to someone who said, hey, okay, so you survived, that's great, what can I do to prepare? I mean, how can the average person prepare to survive a tough situation?
For an average person, I would say work on your reaction skills of reacting to whatever scenario that you want to react to, make sure you know how to bandage people up, because there's way more of those. There's more likely I'll come across a wrecked car and I'll need my medical skills than I will be to pull out my gun for, you know, somebody at a mall somewhere. That's unlikely in most places, but medical skills are important. I kind of say that just be yourself and train with the stuff that you have to make yourself more effective in whatever situation comes up, whether it's pulling your gun or medical skills or out hiking and you get bit by a rattlesnake. What do? You know, you need to know how to react to situations. I think you just gotta know, study, read, learn from other people who've been through those same experiences, and that's your best way to survive.
There it is.
There it is.
So, thanks for coming, Jaeger.
No problem.
I appreciate it, man. It's like I mentioned earlier, one of my favorite things to do, even to this day, is just to learn from other people. You know, I didn't experience anything even close to what you experienced, and so I appreciate you being willing to share with us, because that's, you know, I know it's interesting to have to.
It's more difficult to explain, you know, because I normally don't do that a whole lot. I mean, with people that I've been there and experienced with, we can shoot it all day long.
It's hard to relate sometimes. It's hard to relay, not relate, but it's hard to relay that information
But yeah, thanks for having me on.
Well, absolutely, man. Any final parting words?
I don't have anything. I think we covered just about all of it.
Evaluate
yourself.
Evaluate yourself and evaluate your likely scenarios.
Yep.
I think people have to start holding themselves to a higher standard. You know, I know John, you and other guys who work with me are constantly complaining because nothing's ever good enough for me.
Yeah. Well.
You know, but that's kind of how I live my life. Nothing is ever good enough. I mean, it can always be better. And it's not that I'm not satisfied with things. I'm satisfied with things.
Well,
I can be better than this.
Striving for excellence.
Yeah, I can be stronger, faster, smarter.
Nope.
You know, what can I do to be stronger, faster,
How far smarter? Can you push yourself?
Yeah.
That's the key thing. If you don't know you can do something, you'll never know unless you try.
Mm-hmm. I enjoy doing things that push me outside my comfort zone. That's the biggest thing I could personally recommend to people about how to learn to survive bad situations. Learn to work outside your comfort zone. Yeah. Do things. I don't care if that means whatever, talking to that, you know, hot chick you've been scared to talk to, or whether it means going and doing something like Tough Mudder, or whether it means, you know, going and
jumping out of an airplane.
Well, whatever it is, go do something that makes you step outside your comfort zone, you know, because that is what's going to help you prepare for stressful situations. I mean, you're basically putting yourself in a stressful situation on purpose. And then when you're put into a stressful situation, not on purpose, like you said, like, holy crap, I'm totally out of control of the situation.
Right.
At least it'll help you mentally prepare for those kinds of things. So next week.
What's next week?
I'm excited about next week. We've got Hunter Kale on the show. Some people know him as Nubs or the No-Handed Shooter.
Oh, that's right.
Young man born with no hands who is an up-and-coming competition shooter. If you haven't checked him out, you can check him out. Nubs Kale. Kale is C-A-Y-L-L. And you can find him on Facebook. He's on Instagram under, I believe he's No-Handed Shooter on Instagram. He's on Facebook. You can check him out. And this guy, I mean, to talk about the ability to adapt, improvise, and overcome, this guy has improvised. He's modified equipment. He's had other companies modify equipment for him. He does mag changes faster than people with two hands and 10 fingers. And this guy literally, you know, Hunter literally has nubs for hands, and he just does a phenomenal job of doing it. And so what we're going to be talking to him about is the effects of attitude in shooting and competition, because he's a great competitive shooter. And so we're going to have him as a call-in guest, and we're just going to be talking to him about how attitude, how that mental aspect, kind of part of what we talked about earlier today, has an effect on what you're doing in life in general, but particularly in his position. Nice. Competition shooting. So looking forward to that show next week. And anything else, any parting words from you, John?
No, I think I'm good. Think we're good.
All right, well, until next time, stay aware, stay safe, and train hard. You've been listening to The Arms Room. By the dawn's early light, what so proudly we hailed, and the twilight's last gleaming, whose broad stripes and bright stars through the night.